This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
That indeed it is. Bob Mata is joining us. We're going to talk about the Gabby Petito case and the $50 million lawsuit that has been filed against the Moab Police Department and naming Eric Pratt, one of their former officers, in it as a defendant. But break that down and just see how strong that is and get Bob's opinion as a defense attorney on, now, was there something that truly was wrong here? Were they doing their job? Were they in a position of being stuck in the middle? I want to hear all about it. Bob Mata, defense attorney, and of course, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Bob, there is so much here. Eric Pratt, who was one of the officers that did talk to Gabby Petito, and then they eventually left. The department coming back and saying, you know, look, we were respectful to her. We did essentially what we could, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing there. But Pratt himself, not the greatest history as well, and it kind of makes you wonder if some of that played into the judgment there, told other officers that laundry raised more red flags in a Chinese communist rally, failed to take action, though. The lawsuit also claims that Pratt ignored signs of abuse and cut laundry loose, despite telling his superiors that he viewed laundry as a threat to Petito's well-being. What are your thoughts on where this is standing?
I think that, first and foremost, the biggest thing anytime you sue a governmental agency is, you know, they have immunity to a certain extent. Yeah. So that's going to be the first battle. I saw everything in terms of like we all did in terms of all the videos that were released, and they were very quick to release videos of the interactions that went on that day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw some things subsequently, like after it all was done and they had found Gabby's body and they found Laundrie's body as well, that, you know, showed some pretty definitive marks on her face. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't say whether or not those were resultant from the day in question. If they were, because like when I saw the video, I couldn't see any clear marks on her face.
Sure.
I knew that they had seen something on her hands, because the fact of the matter is in a civil case, you're talking about a completely different burden. Okay. So let's assume that they can get over the governmental immunity, which will be the first thing that they attack in terms of defending the case. They're going to say, look, we have governmental immunity. We were just trying to do our jobs. Things happen. We have no control. What can, you know, happen after, you know, we resolve the issue in the way that we best saw fit. You know, and if they can survive that in summary judgment, meaning the plaintiff, meaning, you know, Gabby's family, then at that point, it's going to become a question of whether or not they were negligent. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it, you know, I've been handling criminal cases for a long time in my career. And in Illinois, if law enforcement walks into a scene, a domestic scene, and the person who called 911 has any kind of mark whatsoever, that guy's getting arrested.
Yeah.
Like, no, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, there's no talking your way out of it. That, you know, it's the instinct is to arrest, and you can figure it out with the judge. And, you know, obviously, I mean, hindsight is 20/20 always. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of us know that had Brian been arrested on that day, Gabby Petito's alive. So, you know, I think that there's going to be a lot of heartstrings that are going to get pulled on that jury if it ends up going to a jury. I mean, typically these things settle. The odds of it actually making it to trial are slim. I anticipate that if the Petitos can survive the summary judgment phase, which is essentially where they go in and they say, look, without even having to look at the facts, you know, the merits of the case, you know, we don't need a jury to decide it. It's the law decides it, you know, and the law is saying that they can't sue us because we're a governmental entity and we have immunity. If the judge says, well, I disagree, and, you know, it's going to survive summary judgment, at that point, they'll start talking settlement. I mean, they certainly don't want to be put under the microscope, they being law enforcement out there, and have them digging into everything, you know, because it's going to, like, it'll be a nightmare PR wise for them beyond what it already is, you know, because at, like, the, in the discovery process of the civil case, which, remember, is a much lower standard.
Yeah.
Okay. We're not talking beyond a reasonable doubt. We're talking preponderance of the evidence. That's all they have to do in order to win on a civil case, which means, I always say, look at it like a football field. Preponderance of the evidence is the 51, you know, getting over the 50. Whereas, like I may have said this last time, whereas beyond a reasonable doubt, you're getting to the goal line. You're not necessarily crossing it, but you're getting to the goal line. So it's a much lower burden for them to meet in terms of the plaintiff in order to recover in that. So, you know, I think that it'll end up settling. I think that the Petitos will get some money. I think that there's, you know, the fact of the matter is she'd be alive. And, you know, and it's a tough thing to dispute because he should have been arrested. You know, I mean, clear that there had been some type of altercation, and, you know, he sweet talked his way out of it. And she, much like is often the case, sadly, with victims of domestic abuse, you know, she, because she was in that situation where he's there, they're on the road, she starts thinking, what am I going to do? You know, if they take him into custody, or if he's arrested, am I going to be able to get him? You know what I mean? She started, like, everything was running through her mind at that point, to where she basically somewhat corroborated his statement that, you know, as to what went on that day, instead of being able to be forthright, because she just had so much going on externally, you know, aside from the event itself. I mean, they're on the road. They'd been on the road for months, you know, so it was a really tough spot for her to be in. And it's obviously beyond tragic, but frankly, I hope that they recover, because I, in my opinion, don't think that law enforcement did their job that day.
Sure. And in the past, speaking of other cases with this specific department, can their past indiscretions be used against them? In 16, there was an investigation by the Utah Department of Public Safety over allegations that officers were misusing the state driver's license database to look up personal information on people they knew, including local journalists and politicians. In 18, an officer with the department charged with multiple counts of domestic violence after allegedly assaulting his girlfriend. And then in 19, the department came under fire for handling a sexual assault case, with the victim claiming that the officers did not take her seriously and did not properly investigate the incident. So it kind of shows a pattern of behavior here, or lack thereof, on their part for taking this sort of thing to the level that it should be in terms of seriousness.
Yeah, I think that, you know, initially, like I was kind of going through how the process works. I mean, that would only be able to be brought up at trial.
Yeah.
And, you know, believe me, both sides would bicker pretty heavily in terms of trying to get that type of basically prior bad acts information in, kind of like 404B, a little bit like what you saw in Murdoch, where they were getting prior bad acts in. Now, this is civil in nature, so like anything, it's a different standard. I mean, it's going to depend on whether or not they find it to be relevant, whether it's relevant to, you know, the case in hand, were some of the same people involved, you know. So, but again, I don't think it's going to get to trial. I think what'll ultimately happen, I think that, you know, they'll use that type of information, that kind of bad publicity and those kind of bad facts to bully them into settling the case. And look, I mean, if the Petitos had their druthers, I'm sure they are not wanting to relive the nightmare by going through a trial. You know, I'm sure that they would rather recover, you know, quietly in a settlement, because, like, who wants to have to sit there and testify about the worst day of your life? You know what I mean? So I tend to think that, you know, if they're smart out there, you know, they're not going to drive this thing all the way home. They'll see if they can survive that. You know, the plaintiff's counsel will put pressure on them with all the stuff that you were talking about in terms of, look, like, you guys are not a pristine agency out here. You guys have some warts. And, you know, how effective that'll be, I don't know. I think that the facts in and of themselves of what happened that day and what didn't happen and what should have happened are pretty strong on their own.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Bob Mata. host of Defense Diaries. You can find that at defensediaries.com, and also one of the most kick-ass defense attorneys in the country. So thank you for joining us, Bob. We're going to talk more with him in just a little bit about Brian Koberger. So press subscribe so you don't miss that conversation. And get it ad-free. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can subscribe commercial-free, get access to all of our shows commercial-free. You can binge away anytime right there through Apple Podcasts with no ads. So do check that out. My name's Tony Bruschi. You can find me on Twitter at TonyBPod. Stay with us.